the sixth case this morning, which is Wyatt versus Barnhart.
Gary Shabetsky, and I represent the appellant. Mr. Wyatt was awarded benefits by Minnesota Law Judge back in 1993. And at the time that he was awarded benefits, he had testified at his hearing that he had been doing a part-time job. After his hearing, he went to work for the State of Illinois Department of Corrections. They made special accommodations for him, and they did all these other things. Well, the bench state law judge entered his decision in October of 1993. In 1994, the ALJ found that Mr. Wyatt had four quarters of coverage, and this sent up a red flag. And in 1993, the McDonald v. Bowen decision had already been made by the Seventh Circuit and spelled out the right to a trial work period. But the administrative law judge apparently didn't understand the trial work period. And so, after finding out that he had income in 1993, he ordered a supplemental hearing. And he said, "I have decided to reopen the case in order to make a determination of whether the claimant has, in fact, engaged in substantial gainful activity." He doesn't make any reference to trial work period at all. There was a subsequent hearing. Evidence was presented only as to the issue at hand. And that issue was, has the claimant engaged in substantial gainful work activity? Additional evidence regarding the claimant's work wage and self-employment income shall be added as exhibits in the record. So we went to this hearing with understanding it violated the prior work period. I tried to explain to the administrative law judge about prior work period, that you didn't have to have 12 consecutive months at the time, that you know, you could get, you could, the prior work period could apply at any time after the first 5 months. But the administrative law judge didn't want to listen to it. So what he did, he went back in and he messed with the medical evidence. He decided the medical evidence. Well, no additional medical evidence had been provided because that was not at issue. And so he ruled that the claimant was no longer disabled. And because he was disabled, the trial work period did not apply. And Mr. Wyatt has been attempting to get benefits ever since that time. Now, the matter went to the appeals council, demanded back to the appeals council, it was heard again, it went back to the appeals council said, no, we're not going to review it, it went to the federal district court. The federal district court said, once the appeals council ruled on that and remanded that case, that changed the whole issue. And the issue no longer was whether or not there's a violation of the duties of the judge, an error of law. The administrative law judge had no basis whatsoever for reopening the case in regards to the medical evidence. Now, if he felt he needed some information about the prior work period, substantial gainful employment, I agree he had a right to look at that because that was suspect. Because this man had all these earnings. But as soon as Mr. Wyatt found out that he was going to be entitled to benefits, he immediately notified the Social Security Administration. And the Social Security Administration followed the rule set forth in McDonald v. Bowen. He was entitled to 9 months of trial work period. And they paid him benefits for those first 9 months when he worked. He worked a total of 11 months. After 11 months, the last 2 months, he did not receive any benefits. After 11 months, he couldn't perform the job. he had to quit the job, and so he notified the Social Security Administration, they put him back on benefit until the subsequent hearing that was held in 1995. And at that time, the judge ruled against him, said he was never disabled, not entitled to trial work period, and he owed all this money back to the Social Security Administration. It's our position that the administrative law judge made an error of law. And this error of law is very, very important, because if every administrative law judge can go out here and put somebody on, and then find out they did a trial work period, and go back in and change the evidence of them, then who's going to be secure in trying to go out and do a trial work period? I wouldn't, if I was in that situation, I wouldn't gamble my luck. You know, so it's very defeating type decision on the part of the administrative law judge. He is undermining what intent was behind this trial work period. And this is our position. The administrative law judge made an error of law. He could not do what he did. I don't care what anyone says, I really believe, in my heart, he cannot do what he did.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Dillon?
Mr. Wyatt essentially argues to this court that he had no obligation at the time of his 1993 hearing to disclose to the ALJ that he was actively seeking work in his profession, and in fact he already had a job lined up, which he in fact started shortly after the hearing. He also believes he didn't have any obligation to report to the ALJ that he started this job just a few days after the hearing.
Can you help me by telling me what you are offering to show that Mr. Wyatt was required to disclose the omitted thing?
Well, let's start with the applications he signed. It can be found on page 634, 228, 235, and 482 of the transcript. And these, Mr. Wyatt signed that he would notify the agency promptly if he went to work.
How much more promptly could he have notified?
Well, certainly before he was awarded benefits. It seems a little disingenuous to wait until you're awarded benefits when he'd been working for 3 months at that point. And what troubles me more about this case is not so much that he didn't report when he went back to work, but at his hearing, let's look at what he testified to. Now, at the 1995 hearing, it comes out that even at the 1993 hearing, he knew he had this job lined up. He says, I knew that, you know, that the job was there for me. I had to pass the drug test and screening. Okay, but you knew that if you passed the drug test and screening, you'd have gotten the job. Uh-huh, right. And did you know that you were going to take the job? Yeah, I mean, I needed the job. Now, let's go back and look at what he said in 1993. This is after extensive questioning by the ALJ about his past work. He'd been doing a part-time job, as counsel pointed out, until 2 days before the hearing when it ended. He talked a lot about his work activity. Then his attorney asked him, is there any job that you know you can perform? At this time, no. The ALJ asked him if he could do a sedentary job lifting no more than 10 pounds, alternately sitting and standing. Do you think he could do it? Under the present conditions, I would say no. Then he talked about how he wasn't able to do his prior part-time social work job. I point out that the job that he already knew he was going to get was a full-time social worker job, 40 hours a week. Nothing in the trial work provisions would allow a claimant to make misleading or misrepresenting statements at a hearing, much less the fact that he'd already signed applications saying that he was going to disclose this information. Now let's look at the 1993 decision. The ALJ awarded benefits because he believed the claimant when he came in and said he couldn't do any work. He believed him when he said, I can't even do a simple sedentary job. He says, in fact, that the principal component of the different results in this case, as opposed to prior ALJs who looked at the evidence and denied his benefits, is that my assessment of the claimant's credibility is contrasted with Administrative Law Judge Capshaw. Capshaw thought the claimant overstated some key elements of his limitations, while I, on the other hand, found his testimony to be basically credible. Understandably, when he finds out about this work activity and the fact that he was concealing the fact that he was about to start a job days after the hearing, the ALJ no longer found that he could find this man credible. And I want to point out, I find it a little bit puzzling that counsel represented today that he was unaware at the time of the 1995 hearing that issues other than substantial gainful activity would be brought up. As we pointed out in our brief, the ALJ did send a notice prior to the hearing stating that I will be considering whether you're disabled, the medical evidence, all of that. What's more troubling is if we look at the transcript, page 139 and 140, counsel was aware, and it looks like if you look at page 8 of the transcript, he submitted substantial medical evidence at the 1995 hearing himself. Certainly was admitted at that hearing. So for counsel to argue today that he wasn't aware that medical issues might be brought up at that time is a little puzzling. Certainly he was aware at the 1995 hearing, or he should have been aware, his counsel should have been aware that this was at issue. As it's pointed out, the appeals counsel did remand again when he submitted even more medical evidence so that they could consider the more medical evidence. Certainly by the time we had the final decision in this case, he had more than ample opportunity to present his case on the merits. The ALJ, as I mentioned, had more than ample reason to reopen this case. We point out that for the Title II case, he only had to find new material evidence. It's not clear whether counsel is challenging the Title 16, but the ALJ's findings also establish fraud and similar fault. You can't argue this evidence isn't new. He didn't submit it until after the ALJ awarded him benefits. The ALJ found that this was clearly material. It changed the outcome of the case.
Well, what about McDonald versus Bowen, which says that trial work doesn't constitute evidence that a claimant is not disabled? How do you deal with that? Because that's something that the ALJ looked at.
What the ALJ looked at is what this man said he couldn't do. And he said, I don't believe I can do any job. I don't believe I can do even a simple sedentary job, when at the same time, he knows he's got a full-time sedentary job.
But I'm talking about when it was reopened. When it was reopened, he was aware of McDonald versus Bowen. That was the law of the circuit.
That's correct.
You're not supposed to take into account the trial work period. You're saying
he didn't take that into account. What he did was he found that this man was not credible and not disabled. And even under McDonald, if you're not disabled, you're not entitled to a trial work period. I would point out McDonald's been overturned since that time.
The ALJ's letters that reopened the case cited only Mr. Wyeth's 1992 and 1993 earnings. That's the fact that he had applied for the prison job prior to receiving the favorable determination. It's very unlikely that the ALJ could have been aware of this fact at the time he reopened the case.
At the time, he didn't make the final support in the reopening until 1996, after he gave the claimant an opportunity for a hearing to explain why there was this huge discrepancy in what he thought was the case before he issued the decision and what appeared to be going on in reality. So he gave the claimant an opportunity to explain what was going on here.
But doesn't the fact that the ALJ and the district court neither applied the law as it stood at the time of Mr. Wyeth's hearing?
They did, because under McDonald, if you're not credible and you're not disabled, you are not entitled to a trial work period. It's only if you're under disability when you go back to work that you're entitled to a trial work period. And the whole point was, I believed you before when you said you didn't think you could work. Now I know that was a lie. I don't believe you anymore. I find you could do sedentary work. Not that
how could the ALJ have known? I mean, the letter only cites the 1992 and 93 earnings.
Because
not the fact that...
He didn't have all of the information at that point, you're right. But by the 1996 decision, he did have
it.
I'm sorry. I think we're relying on the 1996 decision reopening in which he said, I find this not credible. And that's the findings that support the reopening. At the 1994, he just said, I have this evidence, this seems fishy, I need to relook at this. And it was not until 1996, after the hearing, that he found out this guy really was hiding some really relevant information that made all the difference in the world to him when he was weighing the evidence. He wasn't up front with him at the hearing. When he found out he wasn't up front, he could not find this man credible anymore. And if that's all that the award was based on, then that can't stand. It was at least reasonable for him to say, I can't find your testimony credible when you are withholding this type of information that's completely inconsistent with the testimony you gave in 1993. Once we found him not disabled, he wasn't entitled to the trial work period. That's under, that is under Walton, that's under McDonald, that was in effect at the time, and it's consistent with what the appeals council said in their remand order too. If you find this man disabled based on all of the evidence, then you look at whether he gets a trial work period under McDonald. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have 4 minutes.
In regard to this matter of substantial gainful employment, the judge nowhere mentioned the right of this individual to a trial work period. And to second guess something, you know, at the first hearing, Mr. Wyatt explained in detail what he was doing. He said he was doing part-time work, where he was working at. He did not keep anything from the judge, but if you read that decision of the judge, she said he didn't tell him that. The judge did remember hearing that. But in the transcript, it's there. He told that judge about that part-time job. And yes, at the time of his hearing, he did have an application in. There's a big difference from having an application in and getting a job. I mean, I have had several applications and I didn't get the job. But that was the situation. He testified to that. You know, he didn't try to keep anything from the administrative law judge. But as to go into credibility, the administrative law judge didn't advise Mr. Wyatt that he was going to redo the medical part of his case. He only advised him that he had been working. And under McDonald versus Baldwin, he had that right to do that. Mr. Wyatt was able to go to work because the Illinois prison made special accommodations for him. They had cots over there that he could lay down. Not very many employers don't let you put a cot up. You know. That's why he was able to go to work. I have an employee that came through the trial work period. I had to make special accommodations for her. She's very handicapped. They're very good employee. She's off disability social security. But Mr. Riley told us he couldn't cut the mustard. He only lasted for 11 months, even though they made this special accommodation. They tried to make a capital sense out of what he did. Man simply tried to go back to work, which he was entitled to do under the Bowen decision. And now the government wants to say, oh, he's allowed, he's this, that, he's done everything. The man, as soon as he got his decision, went to the Social Security Administration, and they set up the trial work period. Just like the newspaper law judge did that. The local office did it right. The newspaper law judge did it wrong. Because he worked, he had a 9-month trial work period, then 2 months where he didn't get any benefit, and then he quit. So it's our position that the administrative law judge was wrong in going in and redoing that decision on the basis of credibility. You know, that was not an issue. It was the earnings that the claimant was making. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. We'll move to the